Welcome back, and thanks for checking out another episode of On the Jumbotron. Thank you all for your support thus far and helping us get this podcast going. Today's guest is Shane Graham, former professional football player who was a place kicker for 15 seasons in the National Football League. Get ready to hear stories about mental toughness, crazy Jumbotron game day distractions, and fun stories about former players. On the Jumbotron is your backstage pass to the world of game day entertainment. So, don't forget to share this and all our episodes with your friends and colleagues. Here's your host, Christopher Lee.
Hello and welcome, and thank you for joining me again on the Jumbotron. My name is Christopher Lee, and I'm excited to be with you today. I have a guest and a friend today that can give us some insight on some questions that I've been wondering, and maybe you've been wondering too. We're going to be talking to Shane Graham, but we're going to bring him in right now. Shane, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
What's up, my friend?
How's it going? Glad to be here, and thank you for having me.
So, first things first, man, how are you, and what's going on with you right now?
I'm doing well, man. I'm living up in Michigan. That's where my wife's family's from. And, you know, I run my own business. It's kind of a private coaching. So I coach kicking and punting, things like that. But I also do special teams consulting. It's more or less the kicking and the instruction, from camps to private lessons to, you know, mental performance coaching for kickers and punters. But I also enjoy, you know, as being a special teams coach after I finish playing, dabbling in that and helping out with teams when I can that way. But, you know, it's working from home. It's having flexibility. It's hard to complain about it. And being able to build relationships with a lot of kickers, not only locally to here, but across the country. Being able to have camps kind of in different cities here and there, work private lessons in different cities here and there. It's cool to build those relationships and see how players develop and grow, you know, on the field and off the field through those relationships. So it's something that I enjoy a lot.
What sort of names, if you can name drop a little bit, that have been through your camp and or that you have worked with in the past? Just put some punters out there and some kickers out there.
I mean, I've worked with a lot of guys. Like I coached Evan McPherson, the kicker for the Bengals, when he was at University of Florida. Worked with quite a few of you know, guys that are in the NFL now. I don't like to take credit for them, because their talent was there, and it's just a matter of fine tuning and sharpening the edge and mental strength, mental toughness, that I really like to work with my older guys, because a lot of the times it's little tiny tweaks in technique and form and certain things with body positioning. So I don't like to take credit for certain guys. But there's guys that I've mentored. I mean, I mentored Jake Moody, who's in San Francisco, and fortunately he's injured right now. You know, quite a few of the guys from last year's draft class are guys that I've had my hands on at one point working with them. You know, every year there's a few guys I work with from college that make it into the NFL. And there's a lot of kids I work with in the high school level that make it to the college level. One kid that really kind of stood out, I'll say, is a kid named Kyle Limmerman, who was from Dallas, and he is now the kicker for TCU. He won the job as a true freshman. He actually came to Michigan and stayed with me for about a week. I'd worked with him in Dallas some, and there's quite a few others around there, but I don't want to name some guys and leave some guys out and kind of feel like I'm not giving them, they're just due of the attention they should have. So I want to be careful when I do that, but also I don't like thinking that I'm taking credit for someone else's success either.
I got you, man. I got you. The people that have worked with you know that they have worked with you.
Exactly.
I mean, exactly. What you did in the league and the things that you've done with, you know, the different teams that you played for and all the accolades and things that you have being on a Pro Bowl and stuff like that. I mean, that's honors right there, bro. I mean, you did some phenomenal stuff. you know, this show is about being on the Jumbotron. And, you know, when you're in front of the cameras on you and it's a high pressure kick and stuff like that, is it all mental? I mean, tell me about something like that.
So the easiest analogy I can make is there's a huge difference between by yourself training, performing alone when no one's watching, when there's no repercussions, when there's no accountability, when there's no verification, right? We can all, oh, remember that time I hit that shot from here, wherever, or I did this and no one can prove it. There's no pressure in that moment because there's nothing to lose. There's no risk. So when you're a kicker, when you're in high school, there's risk involved, but it's not much. It's your status at school and your community. When you get to college, it's not just the status within the school, which, by the way, can be 10 to 50,000 people. It's your status also in the community, but with the alumni base around the country. So you're dealing with a little bit more. You've got TV exposure. You have the possibility that they can recruit someone else to come take your job if you don't do the job correctly. So that builds on that. What is the risk of failure, right? Mm-hmm. When you get to the NFL, it even becomes exponential because not only is it all the fan base of a team, your teammates, the coaches, but you can get fired like that. And just knowing that for a lot of people, it's they can have all the physical ability in the world, but if that physical ability can't sustain consistency under duress, mm-hmm. under stress, when you start thinking about the result of what you're doing versus the process of what you're doing, that's where the problems start to come out. And that's where people separate. You know, that's the difference between a guy that plays in the NFL for a year and an Adam Vinatieri who kicks game winners in the Super Bowl is there's a mental toughness that comes in where you almost say, I don't care what happens. I've got nothing to lose. I'm just going to perform. Mm-hmm. And now you're at the mercy of human nature. We're human. We're not perfect. We might mess up. But you know what? I can live with that because all I can do is control what I can control. I can't bring anything from the future of that worry into my moment because if I do, I'm essentially taking a machine with well-oiled and perfectly fitting gears and throwing an extra gear in there loose and gobbing the whole thing up. So it's a matter of understanding, how do I still perform a task when I can't let anything else outside that task create the perception that it matters more or less depending on when that task happens?
You just said a whole lot, bro. I'm trying to center in on that. I mean, because there's a lot of distractions that happen. I mean, you just mentioned, you know, getting let go, getting cut on a team from, you know, you having your body in shape, having your mind in shape. I mean, that's a normal thing that you want, but you're doing it in front of thousands of people. Some that are cheering for you, some that are not cheering for you. When you make a field goal, yes, yes, yes. When you miss a field goal, yes, yes, yes. I mean, yeah. That's a lot that you are having to process. And then from the distance that you have to make these field goals from, it may be a game on the line, and then having to deal with all of that, you know, with the makes and with the misses.
Well, and here's an analogy I use, especially when I'm training guys and putting them through some of the education that I do with them. Task A, task B. Okay. Think of this as, I'll just tell you what the first task is. An 8-inch wide steel beam sitting on the pavement. Okay. If I say walk across that beam, could you do it?
Just walk across it.
Just walk across. It's 8 inches wide. We could probably do it if it was half that, but 8 inches right. wide on a steel beam that's right. maybe 8 inches off the ground from the top of it, right? It's laying okay. on the concrete. Yeah. If I told you to walk across it, you could probably do a cartwheel across it and spin around and still get to the other end and laugh about it, right?
Right. Right.
Put it 100 feet in the air.
Yeah.
So it's an extreme example. I get that. But mm-hmm. what changed? Did the task change or did the potential result change?
The result changed. The task is still the same. You just want to walk across it.
Exactly. It's 1 foot in front of the other, right? There's a process that you have to do. Well, it's a matter of how do I do it without the fear of what the potential that hasn't happened yet, the potential result, how do I keep the thought of that result out and still do the task?
Okay.
And that becomes a lot of like, how do you overcome the fear of failure type thing?
You're smart, bro.
I was so smart that even though I went to school for videography and knowing how to edit and do all that stuff, that when I had all my film put out, so I was wanting to send film out to teams, I came to you to help me edit it and put it together.
I wasn't going to mention that part, but you did. And I enjoyed every moment of it, getting you prepared and stuff like that. I remember being at Tech and just seeing you come in. I don't know if you were on a team then, but you coming in and practicing weekly, staying sharp, staying tight, staying ready pretty much. How do you, I mean, during that time, and, you know, people say that you were a journeyman because, you know, you hit a lot of different teams. How did you keep your mind sharp? I mean, is that with the task A, task B that we just talked about? I mean, that's a lot to always be ready for.
No matter where or when I played for a team, my mm-hmm. task was always the same. It was myself, the space between me and a football. How do I make sure I'm always the exact distance from the ball based on my step off, my measurements, all the things that I do? How do I create a comfort zone through routine to where no matter where or when or how, whether, anything, I had a protocol that I always fell into that it didn't matter where it was. It was just a matter of my task is kicking a football. And how do I control all the variables within my process to kick the football? So I could do that on my own. I could do it with a team. So I made sure when I was on my own, I was preparing as if I was with a team.
I know there are video boards and jumbotrons in the end zone. When I was working at Tech, we purposely put stuff up to distract you guys.
Up next, Shane shares stories about the game day antics of NFL video teams and jumbotrons.
When their team is kicking, it's black. Coach was like, hey, just be careful. Try to look at something besides the scoreboard because they're going to mess with you. I came off the field. I'm like, holy crap. What was that?
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back to continue this convo after this short break from our sponsor.
Ever wonder how those fans on the jumbotron always look camera ready? It's all thanks to Fan Beauty Supply. From long-lasting lipsticks to sweat-proof foundations, Glam Fan has everything you need to stay flawless from the tailgate to the final whistle. Visit glamfanbeauty.com and use code JUMBO for 20% off your first purchase. Fan Beauty Supply, because looking good is part of the game.
Want to elevate your brand? Join us as a sponsor and shine bright on the podcast. Inform, entertain, inspire. Contact us today to become a sponsor at otjpodcastbooking@gmail.com. That's the letters otjpodcastbooking@gmail.com.
Let's get back to the pod with Christopher Lee and Shane Graham.
Let's go to NFL Stadium.
Okay.
I know there are video boards and jumbotrons in the end zone.
Yes.
I know. When I was working at Tech and other places, we purposely put stuff up to distract you guys. how do you stay focused? Is that all part of that mental thing, just staying focused?
Yeah. So I would know the stadiums. Before I went into a game, whether I had played in that stadium or not, I had done research to know exactly where everything was, because it's a matter of when I visualize the night before games or the morning before games, I want my mental visualization to be as detailed as possible. So I would look up videos, pictures, everything of these stadiums to have a fresh recollection of that mental image. So I would know, is the scoreboard right behind the goalpost? Is it above the goalpost? Is it offset to the side? Where might it be? So I would know, okay, when I pick my target line at Baltimore, mm-hmm. I'm going to find a target line below the scoreboard, because during the field goal at Baltimore, here's what they did at the Ravens Stadium, M&T Bank or whatever it's called now. Mm-hmm. Big, big, huge. At one time, the largest video board in the country or in the NFL. When their team is kicking, it's black.
Right back in the AFC North Divisional race.
And there's a nice Raven logo right in the middle. When we're kicking, they show a video of a camera shooting right down at me from that video board through the goalpost on me. And it's like full body. And then as I'm looking up to like find my target and start taking my steps, they zoom in to where the whole Jumbotron is my eyes. Try to freak you out. And it goes from, and it goes like a little shaky, and then it just goes all the way in right on my eyes. So each eyeball is like 30 feet big.
So you're looking at yourself.
First time I saw it, my coach was like, hey, just be careful. Try to look at something besides the scoreboard, because they're going to mess with you. And I'm like, okay, sure, whatever. No, it did. No, I was fortunate. I made the kick. It didn't complete, but it like, I came off the field. I'm like, holy crap. What was that? And then other teams will sometimes put up videos, you know, they'll do things. Minnesota's known for, they put this like gopher up on there that like has like the goofy eyes on it or whatever. So teams do have that gamesmanship. They've tried to say, hey, like let's cut it out with some of that stuff. But even just having moving video behind you can be slightly distracting, because you don't have a fixed target. So for me, it was, I would pick out a specific letter on a sign or a mezzanine number in the tunnel of a stadium, or a section 103 or some sort of a fixed sign is what I would do to stop looking at that. But, you know, Baltimore is always that one that like stands out in my memory, is like they go in and they zoom in real fast right to your eyeballs.
So you look at that target, and then you go down and look at the ball, and then you just try to get the ball to that particular target. Is that the goal?
So for me, like, you ever see how kickers will like, they'll stand where they're going to kick it, and then they walk backwards, and then they walk sideways. So mm-hmm. when I walk backwards, I'm looking at my target line, and I'm walking directly away from my target line so that my eyes, the ball on the ground where it's going to be, and then beyond that is all one straight line. And then I take a 90-degree perpendicular sidestep so that no matter where I am on the field, I'm always just lined up to a straight line. But I like to find something to actually use as a reference point. So like when I played in Cincinnati, it would be like the eye in Bud Light that was on the scoreboard or something, right? Like something that's fixed that I can focus on. And that gave me points of reference, so I would know what I was going to look at.
That's wild.
Once you're in your stance, it does you no good to really look up at the target, because you've already done your aligning for your consistency and you know, detailed correctiveness for your steps. That's all done during your alignment. Once you're in your stance, it's execute, go. That's all you're thinking. And follow through towards the target line.
Were you taught that, or is that
some of it? You see guys doing it in the NFL when you're a kid, so you kind of figure it out. You're kind of like, I teach it to guys. I see some guys who just do it because they see it on TV. They don't know exactly the details and they don't do it. So I love it when I get to teach kids, like, hey, have conviction in what you're doing this. Don't just do it because you saw it, or don't just do it because somebody gave you a really rough explanation. Like, believe in every single step of this so that you could explain it. So when I teach it to guys, I'm like, I want you to walk me through this. Like, narrate what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So when they'll go, well, first I get my spot, and then I back up, and then I take steps over. I'm like, no. First you get your spot. Then you square up to the target. Then you take your three steps as you're looking at your target walking directly away. Then you look down at your toe and make sure your line is straight. Then you square your body back up so you can get a perfect 90-degree angle when you walk over. Then you set your feet a certain way. Then you set your body positioning a certain way. Now you breathe. Now you're relaxed. Now you just think go when the ball snapped. So there's, I want them to have conviction versus, I don't know, I just do it because I always have. That's just what I saw somebody do. Like, no, do it, be able to explain it, but believe in it, have conviction in it, because if not, you're just going through the motions.
And then the head coach calls a timeout. And then you have to do it all over again.
And you just reset your process, and it doesn't, or your routine, and it doesn't create any lack of comfort, because you just fall right back into your comfort zone.
So you mentioned Baltimore was distracting. Are there any other Jumbotrons that, you know, got in your way throughout your career?
I won't say got in the way. You know, it's funny, when I was in college, only when we played in NFL stadiums did we truly have, like, video boards, because, you know, we had the light bulb scrolling, whatever you want to call that, like, yeah, side of the highway light bulb, you know, type scoreboard. We didn't have video board back then. So in the NFL, we played college, you know, we'd play some college games in NFL stadiums, whether it be a bowl game or something. So that was like the first exposure to video boards, but they were smaller back then and usually kind of in the corners. So that was the first time we really, like, hey, if the sidelines are kind of crowded, it's hard to see the field. That was the first time we could, like, watch the game looking at the field this way, but watching the game on the video board like this, to see if we got the first down or whatever.
So now that you're training kickers and stuff like that, and the boards are here, how do you train them? Do you, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's not a board where you train, or maybe there is. Are you, how is all of that affecting them now?
You know, with the high school guys, it's not a big issue. There are some high schools that do have video boards. Now, we're not talking high schools like in Allen, Texas, or the crazy 20,000 seat with luxury boxes and video boards all over the place. Not quite like that, but you'll see a school with a nice stadium, maybe holds a couple thousand, and a big video board. Then they're really cool. I've never had to deal with it being right behind the goalpost when I work with guys. But I usually tell them, hey, if there's an area on that board that has fixed print, whether it's a local business sponsorship or, you know, such and such high school athletics or whatever on that scoreboard, pick the stationary targets and don't look at the video, is what I tell guys. And when I work with guys in college, I always tell them, find a stationary target. Don't look at the video board, because it literally is doing nothing. Even if they're up there kissing your tail, saying you're the greatest in the world, don't watch it when you're kicking. Wait till you go back to the sideline, then you can look up at the replay. But don't get fixed on the video when you're on the field to do your task.
Going on?
Yeah, because especially in the NFL, it's live, right? Like, they're showing video as it's happening. Now, there might be a half second delay on that. I don't know exactly what the generational loss or whatever the feed, I'm not sure, but definitely watching it, because it's just easier to see the overhead camera view, to see the if there was a penalty, and to see, like, whatever it is you're watching, you're either looking at field level and you're seeing a great view, but when you're sitting behind the team and you're not getting ready to be subbed in for the game, you're probably watching the Jumbotron. And that's most all guys.
Really?
Yeah. If you're not actively in the substitution line of the guys getting ready to go in and out, or if you're not meeting with your coach during a change of possession, like the defense will go meet with their coaches as soon as they come off the field to go over corrections or go over things they did right, whatever. Same with offense. Once you're out of that, especially as a specialist, like we don't have coaches who meet with us during the game. So we come off the field. We're going to try to stay out of the way of all the guys that are going through substitutions when we're not in the net kicking, right? We usually all watch the Jumbotron, most all of it, just because it's a much clearer view of what's going on. Now, you can talk about how some of these new stadiums have developed these halo systems and 360s. The one that I loved and hated at the same time was Dallas.
That Jumbotron's stupid, man. It's not even a Jumbotron, that's a Gigantotron.
Because if you're going to watch that video during the game, your neck is going to hurt because you're like this.
Yeah.
Your neck ever get tired looking at this?
I've been to Dallas. It hurts.
Yeah, your neck hurts. My neck hurts just doing it for 5 seconds. You get on the plane after a game, at least me, and even the coach, because the coaches look up at the replays a lot, right? Because they want to see like if they saw that their players had the right assignment or if somebody screwed up or whatever. Typically, when things go bad, coaches look up at the Jumbotron. When things go good, they're celebrating, they're with the team. But when things go bad, they look up and want to see so they can try to diagnose as fast as they can because they're usually going to show a replay. Dallas, oh man, it's so, because it's literally, you have to look straight up and then you have to like actually turn your head to go from one side because it's almost field length, right? Like it's huge. And then now you've got these really cool ones like at Atlanta, LA, you know, some of these new places where you just look across the field, almost eye level, just a little up. You don't have to do that. And you have literally a perfect view all the way around like a halo. So no matter where you at, you just look straight and you can see it. That one's pretty cool. Atlanta's cool, but it only shows the inside because it's so high. It doesn't do any good to have it. It's just you look up from no matter where you're looking, you can see it. But the one in LA is really cool because it kind of hangs down a little lower, but you can see it from both sides.
So the one in LA is almost like double-sided tape.
It is essentially like double-sided LED video board tape.
We just coined a phrase. Okay. So you're at the game. What is the funniest type feature that you've seen during a game where you're supposed to be locked in and focus? What's the funniest one you've seen and where was that?
I don't know about feature, but the funniest situation I ever remember on the Jumbotron was I'm in Cincinnati. We're playing Buffalo. I had never given up a kickoff return for a touchdown my whole career. And I remember we scored, we're about to kick off, they're showing fans celebrating, and I look up as I'm putting the ball on the tee, and I look up, and it was like my girlfriend at the time wearing my jersey, and it was like zoomed in on her, and it was just like, what? Okay, I don't know if anybody else noticed that or not, you know, I did. And then I hit it into the end zone, 3 yards deep. Everybody gets blocked, including me. Touchdown. First touchdown. So I remember that like man, that was the weirdest thing ever. But luckily, it was a good kick. It ain't like it distract me from having a good execution, but it was just like the irony of that was funny. Other than that, you know, it's the, you know, players sometimes get caught up in the whole like, what's the cup game, you know, where they have like the helmets slide around or they do like the mascot digital animation race or something. Like every now and then during timeouts, players get caught up in that, like watching it. Not a lot, typically not the guys that are locked into the game, but you'll get some subs over there that are like, oh, it's two. I told you it was two. And it's like, I guess, you're not playing this game. So
even though you guys are like, you know, locked in, got the uniforms on and stuff like that, you enjoy the content and things that are going on too.
Oh, absolutely. Between the, you know, the video boards, the music, the way everything works together, it plays a lot into the atmosphere of the game. I mean, you know, I mean, no disrespect to Michigan State, but when I coached there, I felt like they lost the crowd so many times during the game because they're like go-to staple protocol when something good happened was to immediately turn everything off and start playing the fight song. And it's like, to me, the fight song should be reserved for, like, I don't know, right after a touchdown, when everyone's already gone crazy, hoopla, crazy crowd, and it starts to get quiet, then you start playing the fight song, right? Mm-hmm. But not in the height of the cheering, because then it just turns into everyone going.
Yeah, I can see it.
And I'm like, man, they don't really get hype in here. And then we play Penn State, and I'm like, holy crap, this is different. They got a DJ. They got the crowd, like, when they do their whiteout, everybody's pom-pom is going at the exact same time in the same direction. The music's bumping. The video board's got something hype going the whole time. And you know, whether it's, you know, it's a little cheesy sometimes when you have the player that comes up and is like, yeah, get it all, you know, like, I think that's a little cheesy, but there are stadiums that, like, really had really cool, like, not only traditions, but like at Baltimore, I remember every time they got a first down, they had this video that literally as soon as it happened, and it was like a 3-frame montage of a football, the chain, and then Jonathan Ogden going first down, and it was like, first down, and everyone in the crowd would scream it. Pittsburgh at the end of the third quarter or at some point during the fourth quarter, they had their sticks, and they had this really cool montage. And it would be like all these like slow motion highlights and like kind of a dramatic build up, right? And then it was like right before the build up and the drop. And it was just,
yeah,
their defense just crushing people. And it was like, that's a huge tradition. If you just Google or YouTube, Pittsburgh Sticks, and then you see, like, I forget the exact name of the song, I don't know why it's blanking on me right now, but it's this really cool thing that they have in the fourth quarter, especially if it's like a dramatic moment in the game where they need a stop or something like that. And it's really cool how that was done for the first time, maybe, or how that was done as a tradition. I mean, I look back to 1999. I don't know if we had the jump. I don't think we did. But in 2000, I remember going to a game. I just got cut, so I was home. I was not on an NFL team. And we were about to play Georgia Tech, first game of the year, like the kickoff classic. That was the lightning game, literally happened right before the game started. We were actually on the field to kick off.
That was the game that Corso's car got hit, right? Struck by lightning?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that game, that's when they did Enter Sandman for the first time. So the video is like, because I saw that video for the first time again years later, because they honored the 99 team. So it was a lot of the guys from that era, they were showing that video. And even though we didn't do that when I was there, it was the very next year, which there were a lot of those guys. And I'm like, man, I know every single person. And it was like a locker room montage, you know, somebody putting their helmet on, somebody putting their eye block on, you know, pulling their glove over, whatever, you know, tying their shoe. And then it was, you know, kind of a dramatic rendition of a coach giving a hype speech or guys hitting each other on the shoulder pads. Like, you know how those packages are put together. And I was like, man, that was really cool. But I remember watching that for the first time in the bleachers as a non-player and just thinking like how cool it was to have these video pieces put together to kind of show and tell a story that fans never get to see. Fans only see that locker room access in a whole different light because it's always filtered and changed out. But then you see one where even though we know it was acting, it was still showing kind of what it was like to be in the locker room in that very moment.
Yeah, I remember putting together pieces like that. And I remember putting something together, I think it was with Coach Foster at the time and with Coach Beamer at the time. And feeling like, man, this is so cool that I get to put together this feature that gets to show in the stadium that maybe will, I don't know, I may help turn the team a little bit if they're down or even if they're up, you know, to keep them motivated and stuff like that. I mean, I understand exactly what you're talking about with that tight feeling. Has there ever been a video or something like that that just got you like stupid hype? I mean, because I know you played with the Bengals for the longest. That was your longest stint. Was there ever a video that they did that just like, brick wall, let's go?
Man, I hate to say this.
Oh, no.
I love my Bengals, but man, they used to have this video that would come on right before kickoff. And then right before kickoff, they would play Welcome to the Jungle. That was like their, you know, like the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it would, that would be like the starting and and then they would start the drum beat and the guitars and all that. And that was cool. But right before that, they played this video of like a tiger like walking through the weeds and coming into the stadium. And it was like, it was like pre-Pixar, light wave. I don't know if they did it with like a Video Toaster 4000 from 1991. I don't know what technology they used for this digital animatronic video that was like freaking Walt Disney could have drawn it in a cartoon better than that. It was so bad. Now they've got really cool stuff in it. They've done a great job of changing that. But I just remember that video, like we literally watched it like, that's the best we can do.
That reminds me, like, Chicago Bulls, their bull, like, running through the city. It was, like, it was real cheesy back then.
But we're talking about the 90s.
Yeah, like, it's just, was it something like that that you're talking about with?
It was kind of, you know, it was just, like, such poor detail in the graphic. Like, I don't know if, you know, what type of graphic card they had in their program, but it was, right. It was not much. They also had this deal around mid to late 2000s where every time they got a first down, you remember Bootsy Collins?
Yeah.
So he's from Cincinnati. He's a big Bengals fan. He did these like music videos for the Bengals, and they would put those up for like the first down. It's another first down, baby. But it would be like what he had like a song for that, and it was like, oh my god, and it was like move the chains or something. Whatever it was so cheesy, and I'm like, oh.
Can you do that voice again of Bootsy?
It's another first down, baby.
That is awesome, man. Let's talk about your college days at Michigan State. And you were at Florida, right?
I was at Central Michigan. Then I was at Michigan State, then University of Florida.
How was the game day production at all three of those universities you worked at?
You know, obviously, budgeting went up with each level I was at. Mm-hmm. So there were, you know, budgetary constraints at Central Michigan, but a good creative mind finds his way through that, right? So J-Mac did a really good job of still making great videos and great things, and whether it was an introductory or something for the timeout or something for honoring a guest of the game, you know, when they'll honor a former player or honor a survivor, or, you know, something when they do those little packages. He did a really good job of that. I just think he was limited with staff. He had to do most of it himself. And maybe he had a couple student assistants. You get to Michigan State, much larger room, much more technology, much more people helping out. You know, things were a little better. You know, I went in there and hung out a good bit just because that stuff interested me. Got to Florida even more.
Give me your, and you can include college teammates, your top five teammates. Hopefully you think you say the right people and they don't, give me your top five that you played with.
Okay. Well, my top is, are we talking me liking them at, or top five talent?
Let's go with both.
Okay. Talent, I'll say, Tom Brady. It's hard to go against that guy as far as talent. Drew Brees. Chad Johnson was a very, very talented receiver. Corey Dillon, one of the better running backs. Ricky Williams. Eli Manning. Devin Hester, probably best returner. Lots of guys were really good. But then I think about, like, favorite teammates. Mm-hmm. My favorite would be Frosty Rucker. He was a defensive end for Cincinnati and a couple other teams. He ended up being the best man at my wedding, so one of my best friends. Mark Ingram, one of the funniest people you can be around. Just really? Such a dude, man. He's so awesome. Him and Jordan Cameron. He is awesome. Their lockers were right beside of mine when I played for the Saints, and those dudes are just so cool, man. Like I can't even tell you how funny, supportive, like good dudes they were. Zoltan Mesko. Okay. So he was the punter I had when I was in New England. Dude knew like six languages, was still young and exposed to like younger culture. So he could kind of bridge that gap a little bit. Was from Romania. His family fled during the Civil War, came over as immigrants, made a name for himself, became a punter at University of Michigan, comes and plays in the NFL. Like, you just think about, like, what his life was like telling stories about hiding under the kitchen table so he was afraid the roof was going to explode on him, you know? Like, crazy stories, but also just top, top, top shelf person. You know, lots of guys, you know, like, it's so hard to like pin it down, but those are probably the ones that like truly stand out the most.
So you went to the Pro Bowl. How was the Pro Bowl? Tell me about that. I've never been there. I will never go there.
So. Yeah, well, I think they screwed up the Pro Bowl. When they took it, the first thing they did is instead of having it after the Super Bowl, they put it before the Super Bowl.
Right.
First mistake. Okay. First mistake. It was cool when I was there that the Steelers won it. That wasn't cool, but it was cool that when they won it, they came to practice 2 days late. So it was like a coronation when they walked onto the practice field and everyone's like, "Oh, it's about time you're here." And they're like, "Sorry, our parade ran over." You know, like it was this really cool moment of like, "Man, I hate you, but man, that would be really cool."
Right.
And I just remember like how cool that was that they still got to play in it. Right. And then they screwed the whole thing up when they put it during the week before the Super Bowl, because people stopped caring about it.
Mm-hmm.
And players didn't want to play. And the teams that went to the Super Bowl couldn't go to it.
Couldn't play. Right.
You know, so you take out a high probably a, you know, 3 to 7 potential guys from the Pro Bowl. So one, you're taking out probably a couple superstars. You know, you're putting so many alternates in, and then then they screwed up. They took it out of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they did this at the same time. I don't know. But when they took it out of Hawaii and put it in Orlando or Vegas or wherever that, or in the Super Bowl city, I don't even know where they put the thing now. To me, it took the, this is a prize. This is a reward. It was so cool to be able to get away from everything and go to Hawaii.
I understand that.
And that was the thing that made it so cool is we're at the Ihalani, this big resort, kind of away from everything, and big resort, super exclusive as far as like if you weren't with the family and had a credential, fans could not be there. Like it was like you could be yourself and have fun and cut up and guys could cuss each other across the pool and not have to worry. Maybe there were kids there, but then they would go over and have Mai Tais at the bar. And then the whole thing was like, don't let your room number get out, because if you're a first year Pro Bowl guy, they're going to put all the drinks on your room. So you never say your room number out loud. And it was these really cool traditions because it was like a vacation away from everything. And that was your reward, was this trip to Hawaii. On the beach every day, beautiful weather. Playing in the game was fun. That was cool. But the whole experience, you got to go to an Air Force base. You got to go shoot machine guns at an Army base. You got to visit a hospital. You got to visit kids. You got to go do different things. There were, now it's in Orlando. It's like, what do you do in Orlando? Like, yeah, there's probably little things they can do, but you're right in the middle of a city.
Mm-hmm.
You're in Vegas. Everybody knows what goes on in Vegas. Like you go to Vegas, it's like the guys are probably going to go out clubbing all the time. The guys are going to go party. There's nothing like novelty about it. Hawaii was such a prize and novelty, in my opinion, that I flew my holder and his wife out there. They had gotten married the year before, didn't have time for a honeymoon. So I said, hey, your honeymoon's on me. You guys go.
Nice.
My snapper and his wife, hey, you guys are coming too. Like, come on me. Like, I couldn't be here without you guys. So it was like a vacation for those guys.
Nice.
And now it's like, it's in Vegas. It's in Orlando. It's in Miami. It's turned into almost like, I don't know. I couldn't even tell you if I watched a single thing about the Pro Bowl on TV this year.
I haven't watched it in a while. I mean, just because it's not that interesting much anymore. I mean, they're not really tackling as much.
I think they play a flag football game.
Yeah.
And then I think they just do like skills competitions.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like kick-tack-toe or dodgeball. You know, like when I was in it, like me and the other kicker, we played horse mm-hmm. with the goalposts.
Mm-hmm.
It was really cool. And then they had like races, and then they had obstacle courses, but it was all like football skill obstacle courses.
Right.
And then you had bench press contests. Like everything was kind of skill specifically related. And there was good prize money for winning those things. Even just entering them, you got prize money. But you won them, you got good prize money. And now it's like it'd be fun to do, but I think it took away the element of this is like an ultimate reward as a player.
You got a few minutes left. Out of all the jersey numbers that you wore, what was your favorite number?
17. Over there's my.
That is dope. An exclusive tour here. I love it. Man. Look at all those helmets. That is amazing. Yes, sir. Yep, that's Coach Beamer.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Coach Beamer. I mean, I have so many stories with Coach Beamer of him just being a friend. and I'm on the video team. I mean, you were one of his players. Tell me a story or two about Coach Beamer.
So it was really cool with Coach because, like, he came to my house. He recruited me. He called me on the phone. Like, that was who I dealt with. And, you know, that relationship was started early. Now, I had no intentions of going to Virginia Tech at this point. But what he did is he called my holder from my high school, who was going to Tech to be an engineer just as a student. And he called Caleb and he said, hey, I know you're coming here to be a student, but if Shane comes here to kick, you can hold for him on the football team. So that changed everything. Wow. And that was one of the major decisions besides Coach Beamer being the special teams coach, you know, the Beamer ball and all that was, I don't think that name was monikered yet until maybe even my senior year or year before that, maybe my junior year, because we ended up blocking so many kicks during our time there. It was crazy. And running back kicks and field goals, all that stuff. But the way he recruited me, so much respect. And then the way he coached me, like he was the coach that came over when we were in individual. They didn't just throw us on a field and say, y'all go, just make sure you're ready. He would go and put us through like charting and talk to us. And it was really cool because like he was our position coach. Mm-hmm. So I had that relationship with him that was really cool. But the thing that stands out the most of all of that in our relationship is the day of the games, the morning of the game, we would have like wake up in the morning, we'd have like a team breakfast, and we had what they called walkthroughs where the defensive guys would go out in the parking lot and go through plays and just kind of in their tennis shoes and what sweatpants and stuff. Offensive guys would go do the same thing. Well, Coach Beamer would take us for a walk around the neighborhood. So me, the punter, the snapper, the holder, like whoever's in our group, we would just go for a walk with Coach Beamer every game. And it was so cool because we talked about everything from, you know, family, girlfriends, grades, you know, telling stories from the summer, telling stories about our childhood, like listening to him tell stories, you know, all these cool experiences that you're talking to a guy who's talking to you like he's one of you versus, you know, some coaches have this like larger than life type when they walk into the room gets quiet type thing. So we got to walk around and just have candid conversations about everything and anything and everything under the sun with our head coach. So we never had to feel like we didn't know him, you know, right. Like hearing him tell stories about Cheryl and Shane and Casey and just be able to like feel like we knew him. But also when you're performing, you don't have that, oh, he won't be mad at me if I screw up because he's cool. It was, no, I don't want to let him down.
Right. The whole
And it was a different feeling than I'm afraid of him. It's, I don't want to let him down.
Mm-hmm.
And it holds you accountable on a different level because now it's like, it's a different type of internal motivation when you don't want to let someone down versus I really hope I don't piss them off and let them down, you know? So that's what made him really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I have similar stories with Coach. He loved his cookout, chocolate shakes, man. And I remember one time, I think Bruce brought him a chocolate. And I just saw him like just eating it and just being so chill. I'm like, how is it, Coach? Oh, it's great. It's great.
I don't know, Palsy. You might want to get one for yourself.
Yeah, he wasn't going to share. He was not going to share. Man, Coach is just awesome. And I remember getting there at Tech and thinking, you know, he was already a larger than life coach.
Oh, yeah.
But thinking that, you know, if you see him in the hallway, you know, you look down or whatever. No, it's, how you doing, Coach? Doing great. How you doing, Palsy? I mean, it was that conversation.
Can you imagine a Nick Saban So I want to show you what I got Coach Beamer for his retirement gift.
Okay.
So the first thing I got him was, I was doing this mini helmet stuff. I'd already been doing that. But I got him one, like the one he wore when he played.
Right.
This one right here.
Uh-huh.
And then I think the last one they wore was... This one right here was the last one they wore.
Okay.
And then this is the one that they did for the last home game.
Right. 25, yeah.
Yep. So this one was kind of paying homage to like the 80s when he first got there.
Mm-hmm.
This one was paying homage to the one he wore as a player.
Right.
So I got him like a little clear glass multiple helmet shelf thing. And that was my gift to him when he retired.
It was just an honor and a privilege to be able to be in relation with Coach and stuff like that.
Well, you feel like you're a part of it. So it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Shane, I thank you for your time, man. I thank you for saying yes to being on this podcast. The stories that you told, the knowledge that you have of the game. You know, I didn't take my camera and zoom into your eyes, but I can see your eyes and I can tell that you love the game of football, man. It's all over you. And like I said, just thank you for being on the show. Thank you for your love of Coach, because we love Coach as everybody loves Coach Beamer. And is there any other things that you want to add?
Go Men Go.
Go Men Go. Guys, thank you for being here on the Jumbotron. And check out more episodes. We have a lot more things that are going on the show. And we'll talk to you later. Have a great one.
Thanks for watching another episode of On the Jumbotron Podcast with host Christopher Lee. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at On the Jumbotron Podcast. On YouTube, follow it On the Jumbotron. This podcast is produced by Great Shot Productions. Opening and break music is produced by DJ LLA. If you're interested in sponsoring the show, email us at otjpodcastbooking@gmail.com. Until next time, stay creative and humble, and always entertain, inform, and inspire.